This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Looking to attack it, good header. It's a fine save by Tom King.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with this week's guest, who is a world record holding goalkeeper. After roaring into professional football with Millwall, he's racked up more than 200 appearances at 8 clubs and at 28 years old has just landed a move to the Premier League. He's been called up for his country, he's bagged an EFL moment of the month and he's even sounded the clean sheet club siren. Currently with Wolverhampton Wanderers, Thomas King. Welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much for having me. Sorry about the delay.
It's been a bit of a mad rush getting here.
Yeah, tiny bit. Yeah, we've had a busy day at training. We've had a behind closed doors game against Blackpool. So yeah, a bit of traffic on the M6, which I'm just getting used to. So yeah, I'll be a Wolverhampton native soon enough. But yeah, for the moment, we're still here in sunny Manchester.
Okay, we will get on to all of that first and foremost. In fact, yeah, we are here in sunny Manchester. It's a lovely, lovely spot, mate.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean my house. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
No, I do really appreciate that. I was more talking about the weather. This is the first time I've seen sun up here since I moved here, I think. So, yeah, no, yeah, the house is all right. Yeah, I can't take any credit. It's all the lovely lady.
Right, of course it is. Yeah. Of course it is. Who I had a lovely chat with beforehand.
Yeah, I hope you bored her to death with goalkeeper chat. She loves talking about goalkeepers as she gets all the time.
So quick fire questions to begin with. The gloves that you wore, or that you wear, sorry.
Gloves that I wear, yeah. It's quite well famous. He has kind of taken on the role of my father figure in the recent years. But yeah, Sells goalkeeper gloves. The best in the market for me. I've worn not many over my career, actually. I've been with Selsey since I was about 16, but tried the odd pair when lads come in, and nothing compares to them, really. The time and care that he puts into the designs and the technologies and things like that is top. Any goalkeepers out there listening, you have to try them before you try anything else. And yeah, I've been wearing the wrap model recently. I had a little go with some Total Contacts today in the warm-up as well, just because of some supply issues and stuff that he's had, which is, he'll admit to you that he's had the same thing. So yeah, just no matter what you wear, the palm is ridiculous, especially with the Nike ball that I'm more than accustomed to now as well. Yeah, the palm's ridiculous. So yeah, the new model coming soon, be on the lookout.
In anticipation for that, good advert, by the way. He'll love that.
I hope so.
I did drop Selsey a line earlier for a bit of dirt on you.
Oh, right.
He's not got back to me.
He's not.
Such
obviously
is the busy
not,
life yeah, he leads.
I've also called him in the car on the way back from Wolverhampton and I've had no answer. So no doubt he'll be ringing me in about 5 minutes. So maybe we can have a guest appearance as well.
Well, if he rings you, I don't know if we'll ever get to this podcast, to be honest with you.
It'll be the Adam Sells podcast featuring Matt and Tom, I think.
Favourite kit?
Favourite kit, we had an all black one the season I debuted for Millwall, and that was really special. I quite liked the all black. I had black boots and black gloves and stuff at the time. I felt a bit like I was on a motorcycle, so yeah, that was good. But to be fair, it's quite interesting actually. We had Castore last season for Salford, and then I forgot Castore this year for Wolverhampton, and the difference between the proper pro model and the kind of model that they give to a lot of the clubs that aren't at the highest level is very different. And the new stuff that I've got this year at Wolverhampton is terrific, like very lightweight fabric, and all the under stuff that they produce is really top. So yeah, it'd be a mix of those two, I think, either this year's one or my first year at Millwall.
They've really surged, haven't they, Castore?
Huge.
I was reading something on them the other day. It's two lads from the Wirral, I think, who created it.
Interesting. That's where my partner's from, so yeah, maybe she knows them. But they pop up everywhere. I'm a huge F1 fan, so you see them pop up with the Red Bull Racing team as well. So I think they do England cricket, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, honestly, the stuff is top. But it's interesting to see the difference between the stuff we had last year at Salford, which is kind of like the more generated stuff that you see that they just try and flirt out to a lot of the League One, League Two, Championship teams. And then the stuff that I've been given this year, which is, I'll show you it after, is just heaps and bundles of kit and travel kit, hoodies, jumpers, caps, everything. So yeah, it's top. It's real top.
Premium. That's Premier League, mate.
Exactly, yeah.
Most memorable save.
Ooh, Brighton in the FA Cup. There was a couple in that game, actually. I played quite well. But yeah, the header from Lewis Dunk. Yeah, we played Brighton in the FA Cup when I was at Newport. And yeah, saved the header from Lewis Dunk. And we ended up taking them to penalties where, unfortunately, I saved two and they missed one and we still lost.
That was the Jason Steele.
Yeah, game, right? When he turned it on, yeah. When we all should have known that he was going to be the excellent Premier League goalie then, shouldn't we? But no, yeah. So yeah, I think that would be, there was a couple of other saves in the game which were good, but I think that It's funny, actually. I look back on that sometimes when I'm a little bit low on confidence, and I just have a little watch back of that, and I just go like, no, it's all still in me. I haven't lost it. You don't become a bad goalie overnight. You don't become a good one. So I can look at that and say, like, that is probably, like, I can achieve that level, and I can achieve that level all the time, you know?
I love that. Interesting. So you go back and look at certain clips, or specifically that game?
Yeah, yeah. Every season I put together a little kind of highlight reel of kind of what I've done during the season, and I can look back, and I kind of like to look at the goals that I've conceded. I do a lot of research on Y Scout and things like that. So, yeah, I've actually got I put together the compilation the other day, on Y Scout, just to have a look back at my season from last season, and been well documented that it was a tough one for me, probably on and off the field. And then I can kind of have a watch back of the video and say, oh no, it wasn't all bad. It wasn't all bad. There were some really good bits in there, and the level you can achieve when you put your mind to it, and when you really concentrate, and when you really focus, when you're in the zone, and your level is high, you know. And it's just the way that I like to work. I know some lads don't really do much analysis and things like that, but yeah, I'm really big on it. Huge.
Definitely going to come back to that.
Absolutely.
Goalkeeping icon.
It's got to be Buffon. From being very, very young, getting into goalkeeping, watching him. Obviously, Champions League was on ITV then, wasn't it? So it was a lot more, when I was a kid, it was a lot more accessible. And I think it's about 80 quid a month, whatever it's for TNT Sport now to watch Champions League. So it's not so accessible. But yeah, watching him with his the chain and the short sleeves, and yeah, watching him at Old Trafford in one of the finals, I think it was, when they played AC Milan, I think it might have been. And that was just like a real iconic moment watching him, and he just kind of looked like this like typical Italian player and everything you knew about Italians. But yeah, no, he's, some of the saves he's made over his career, and for it to span so long, it's actually quite interesting. One of the sports scientists from Wales as well, he works at Parma now. And I've, every time, like, you'd love me for saying this, every time I see him, I'm like, have you sorted that shirt for me yet? Have you sorted that shirt for me yet? I'm like, well, say if I just give you a shirt, will you get him to sign it? Or, and he's like, all right, I'm onto it. And I'm texting him once a week at the minute trying to get this sorted. But yeah. That's my goalkeeper icon, Gianluigi Buffon.
Lovely. And the best goalkeeper you've either played with or against?
Yeah, great question. I'm acting as if like I didn't have answers for these questions because like I don't listen to the pod already, you know? Julian Speroni. So, I think because of the level I was at that time in my career, going into Crystal Palace and watching how he trained, how he performed, the level he produced every day, and then kind of towards the end of my time at Palace, watching him not really deteriorate at any level, but just maybe the game was changing a little bit quicker than he had anticipated, but just still to watch the level of him in training, he was unbeatable. And that was from all the way through from when I was 16 to 20 years old, he was unbeatable. And that's like, there's some honourable mentions in there. David Ford, unbelievable goalkeeper. Obviously now I'm working with, I've only had a couple of days with Jose, but already seen him pull off some incredible saves. Dan Bentley, seen him do some magical things as well over in Portugal last week. So yeah, some really, really top goalkeepers. But I think for that sustained period of time, for kind of what he'd done previously and just to watch him train every day, his level was incredibly high, especially for his age as well. When I got there, I think he was 32, 33. And he'd still beast everybody in the gym and have the highest jump records and squat records and stuff like that. Yeah, he was an animal, complete animal.
It's funny that I sat down with Lewis Price last week,
right,
and he said pretty much the same thing about Speroni.
Animal. And obviously Price, he was there the same time as me and Julian as well. Yeah, obviously, I'm forgetting, obviously, the Wales boys in there, they produce a high level. But when you go away with Wales, it's a bit of a different kind of vibe. It's more of a ticking over in the training sessions. Obviously, we don't want to get injured for club football. Tony has a tough job bringing us all together for one session when we kind of know which one it is that's going to play and things like that. But no, Tony does a great job. But yeah, no, Danny Ward, Wayne Hennessy, Adam Davis, three extremely high-level goalies. And obviously now, Davo, Sheffield United in the Premier League. Obviously, I've joined Wolves in the Premier League as well. Obviously, Danny played 25 games, I think it was, in the Premier League last year. Wayne, extremely Premier League goalkeeper experience. So, yeah, we're producing a high level.
Okay. Well, you've mentioned them there. You are playing in the Premier League with Wolves. There is no other place to start. It's been quite a whirlwind month or so, because we were going to record this potentially 4 to 6 weeks ago, but plenty has happened since then. So yeah, talk us through it.
Yeah, well, obviously even more quickly than that, there's been a bit more news, which I'm sure we'll touch on as well in the next kind of 20 minutes, half an hour. But yeah, from the moment that Tony gave me the phone call to ask that if it was something that I wanted to do, I was just completely focused. I mean, my partner, I'm sure he'll tell you after, I didn't even tell her for about 48 hours because I kind of didn't quite believe it myself. I kind of had that like imposter syndrome kind of feeling already. And I was like, oh, like if I take this, is it going to be right? Is it going to be the right one for me? And say if they don't like me, or if I don't do well in the first couple of weeks, or like, and all these like negative thoughts and negative emotions. And I just thought, like, what is the worst that's going to happen? Like, I had a couple of good chats with Selzy and we kind of spoke it over, and it still didn't feel real until the contract offer had really been signed. So the way that kind of like the timeline had worked was Tony had rang me, we'll just call it day one. Tony had rang me day one to mention that Danny and Wayne were carrying Knox for the Wales camps. So then Tony rings me 2 days later. That first call was just to say, stay fit. It was in the summer break, stay fit. This was over the summer break. Stay fit, be ready, you might need be needed. So he rings me 2 days later. So I'm thinking, oh, I'm called up to the Wales camp, etc. He then mentions that to me about the Wolves thing, and it's nothing to do with Wales, it's about the Wolves thing. So I'm like, yeah, obviously I'll take that. Like, to work with someone like Tony every day would be a privilege. He's an extremely top-level goalkeeper coach. I could only see myself getting better working with him every day, which is something I'd mentioned to numerous amounts of people every time I'd gone away with Wales. So then he rings me then 2 days after that, and I'm thinking, oh no, something's happened. He's like, oh no, I need you to come with Wales because Wardy's carrying a bit more of a knock than we thought with his finger. So I said, okay, no problem. Wayne had a sore knee, needs an op. I think he's actually had the op now since we're speaking now. So I'm thinking in my head, I'm saying to Selzy, well, this is the perfect opportunity. Now I get to be with Tony the whole time and we can try and force this through. If I was away from Tony, he's like quite weird with his phone, like doesn't always answer and things like that. So I'm thinking, okay. So I'm saying to Selzy, like, well, now I'm there, I can really force this through. And by the end of the Wales camp, yeah, it was done. And it was just like, on my last day, it was when I got the proper confirmation that it was all done. And I was just like, just kind of in the room, like a bit emotional with Tony, and like the Wales manager, Rob Page, walks in with Alan Neil, and they could kind of see Tony had spoke to them about what was going on, and they just all kind of was like they felt like they're proud and like patting me on the back and things like that. And then you just kind of get that realization that like, this is not the end, this is the start, you know? And it, like, you have to flip it all back on its head again. And I'm like, the moment I got back through the door from the Wales camp was like, right, straight to the gym. I've got to be fit. I've got to be the fittest. I've got to be the strongest, like, to go in there. And then like Tony's ringing me, don't get injured. Don't do too much in the gym. Don't do this. I'm like, okay, no problem. So I tried to get the balance right. But yeah, the last couple of weeks have been crazy from the moment walking through the door for my medical. Like, it's the first time really in my career I've had a proper medical as well. Like a lot of the other clubs, like they do like the old tests and stuff, but I'm in the MRI machine for 2.5 hours, 3 hours, scanning hips and ankles, and it just all felt so crazy. Like that first day, just seeing some boys walk in, I had quite a funny moment with the kit man. And like, so Pablo Sarabia walks in, and he's like, "Oh, Tom, this is Pablo," and I'm like, "I know exactly who that is." Do you know what I mean? Like, you haven't got to introduce him. Like, Pablo's laughing as well. Like, he's like, "Oh, Pablo, this is Tom," and I was like, "Yes, you know, that's a proper introduction." Like, he doesn't know who I am, so I know exactly who that is. And then I shared like quite a funny text with my with a couple of my friends in a group chat, saying last year he was sharing a dressing room with Messi and Mbappe and Neymar, and now he's sat in next to me having a coffee. You know, so it's one of those things that you pick up the level quite quick. The first couple of days were tough, but that was to be expected. The ball speed and the level that they produce every day was so high. Although it takes you by surprise, it's very easy to catch up. And I feel like now in the last couple of days, I'm really starting to get a grasp of the way that the manager wants to work, the way that he trains. He is 100 miles an hour, which is exactly what I need for my career. And I can see that the way that the lads are responding to him, it's going to be a really successful season. So yeah, no, it's been a whirlwind and it's been a dream. But like I said, you kind of get that realization halfway through when you know it's all done, that I'm not just here now to be with these people that I've only seen on Match of the Day. I'm here to compete and I'm here to train, and I want to be looking up. I want to be looking at what's ahead of me. I want to emulate Jose, and eventually I want that spot, you know, like, and that's what I'm there to do. That's the dog in me, the believer in me, that I'm not just here to train and to make up my numbers. I'm here to compete. And I think that's all that Jose and Dan would expect from me anyway. I'm sure that they wouldn't expect me to just turn over and roll over like a puppy. Do you know what I mean? They want that competition. They want that somebody pushing them every day. And I feel like I can really provide that with my hard work and my determination that I've shown in my last couple of years of my career.
So that change in setup, it sounds like, it's obviously an obvious thing to say, but the change in quality as well from facilities, from the guys that you're playing with, Jose, Bence, the goalkeeper coaching that you're getting as well. You spent the last 4 or 5 years, I suppose, in the
League 2, 4 years.
Salford and Newport County. Yeah. So you must have noticed quite an obvious change.
Yeah, I've obviously a lot of my friends have sent me messages, what's the differences? A lot of obviously people in the game are like, what would you say the biggest differences are? And I would say that the ability for those players to go 5-10 minutes without touching a ball and then be complete world beaters at the drop of a hat is incredible. I've never seen anything like it. And for me, the biggest change would be the ball speed is obviously huge. Like you'd have seen that. I'm sure you've heard that from plenty of goalkeepers as well. If say, for example, like the biggest thing that I've noticed that if in a five-a-side or a small-sided game or any shooting drill, anybody has more than 2 yards of space, it's on the target every time. There's no inconsistency in the way they strike, the way they hit, the ball speed. Like just to use Mateus Cunha for an example, sensational. Like I've never seen anything like it. Even with training with Wales, obviously, there's Bale and there's obviously a lot of lads that play in the Premier League now, Harry Wilson, Nico Williams. Like the ball speed that he can move the ball, touch, shift and hit is you can't set, you can't push, you just dive full length and you're just hoping and praying that you get somewhere near it. And if you do, it's an absolute worldie and you watch the whole training ground stand up in ovation because they've seen his level and they know the level that he produces. But this is somebody who starts for Brazil, you know, so it's like that is the level of who I'm competing with all the time. And I always kind of say, like I've always said to my friends, like I always kind of get a gauge of, it's quite weird how I visualize this in my head actually, is that like I've always seen the lads who come in and do well at the start of a preseason or when they're new signings, the lads who come in and do well, the lads tend to warm to them boys a lot quicker. And I know that that sounds so like cutthroat, and but I've heard a lot of footballers talk about this on other podcasts as well, that I've seen players written off within like the first couple of sessions, and a lot of lads like they try and they try and they try, but like the boys can always kind of tell who the good guys are and the guys that want to work hard and who the not so good guys are and who are just kind of there for the ride or money, etc. So like the fact that a lot of these boys now like we're having jokes, we're having laughs, been invited for coffees, been invited for dinner, I'm like, well, I feel like they're starting to warm to me a little bit. I feel like I've maybe overachieved in my level a little bit, but that is now my level that I have to be consistent with every single day, and that's what they expect from me now. And when I drop below that, they're very quick to let you know. It was quite funny. I had a good chat with Tony the other day, and like we did a finishing drill, and I'd gone in like super cold into this finishing drill, and things were just flying past me. And he's like, that's not your level today, but tomorrow show me the level that we all expect from you. And I went in yesterday and performed at a really high level in a shooting drill. So it's like, you have to be able to like differentiate between having a bad session and being a bad goalkeeper. So that's the biggest thing for me in my head, that you have all these self-doubts in your head going, can I do it after one bad session? Can I do it? Is this really my level? And as soon as you can block all that noise out and just get back on the grass as soon as possible and just perform to your level, it's all clear. It's all in your head. And it's like, oh, no, I can do it. But then that's when you don't want to become too up and down, up and down, up and down. You just want to kind of flatline it. I want to be a 6, a 7, or an 8 every single day with throwing in a 9 rather than throwing in a 4 or throwing in a 3. I just want to be like minimum 6, 6, 6, 7, 7, 7, 8, 8, 9, 7, 7. And that's just kind of the way I've got to visualize it in my head now, that it's like 7 out of 10 for me is my base layer every day. And that's the level I have to be at to perform with those guys every day.
Hear that so much now, being a steady 7.
Yeah.
It's just what a lot of goalkeepers aim for.
It's all they want. It's all managers want from you. The best person that ever described it to me was Lee Turner, goalkeeper coach. And he said, being a goalkeeper is like being on your driving test. You want to go through unnoticed. You just want to be unnoticed. You just want to be that guy that doesn't give the manager a heart attack. You don't want to give that manager a, my God, what's he doing? Oh my God, a panic goalkeeper. You don't want to be a panic goalkeeper. You want to be that guy that everybody trusts. The manager knows what he's going to get from you every time, to use the car analogy, every time you step in the car, the driving instructor knows exactly what he's going to get from you. You're not going to throw any surprises. And kind of then I kind of visualized it, that my driving test was a car wreck. So I was like, oh yeah, no, I don't want to be like that. I want to be like a smooth driving test. So yeah, that was the best way that I can visualize it.
I know that you have to perform to a level and you always have to be on it. But from what you're saying there, do you feel like now you have to be like on it more than you've ever been?
Every day is a match day for me now.
Yeah.
Every day I have to find the level that I would think about producing for a match day. That there is no, some days, like every player would admit this, you have a bad sleep. I don't have children, but for example, if your children have woke you up halfway through the night or not gone off to sleep at a good time or been a nightmare getting to school in the morning, or you've not eaten properly last night, you've had a dinner with your missus out, or had a drink, like had a glass of wine, and you don't quite feel yourself going into training, you can kind of get through those sessions where you go, okay, well, let me get out of today what I can get out of today, and maybe let's go again tomorrow when I have a good night's sleep, good meal, good prep. But for me now, this is like every day I'm going to sleep thinking like, I have to be 100% tomorrow. There is no excuse that I have to be anything less than 100% tomorrow, because I know anything less than 100% of my level is not going to be good enough to compete with these guys. And so I have to be on it. Like I've been saying to Selzy, like having a good like couple of jokes, like before I'd like gloves would get old and I would kind of like not mess around, but I would keep them because I feel like, oh, it'd be like a good test for my hands and I could test my hands with bad gloves. I've heard Freddie Woodman talk about that on a podcast as well, that we would test our hands with bad gloves. But I've kind of said to Selzy, like, listen, I'm going to be texting you for loads because I need fresh ones all the time. I need to be at the highest level. I need to think in my head that everything is fresh and everything's right and I've got no excuses to go into every session. And then you're just praying for your chance, aren't you, that you've done all the groundwork building into that, and then when you get your chance, you're ready.
Totally get that. You have to mirror what Premier League is. Premier League quality is where you are, 100%. So you have to mirror that.
100%. And just like, even like, I know we laughed there earlier about Jason Steele, but for me, like, that has been the biggest eye-opener as what this Premier League role is now. Like, a lot of Premier League clubs are using the number three role as something different, but I'm sure Jason, when you'd have asked him 4 or 5 years ago when he turned up at Brighton as the number three goalie behind Matt Ryan and Robert Sanchez, I think it was at the time, I'm sure he'd have had aspirations of being Brighton's number one goalkeeper someday. And I'm sure a lot of people would have looked at him the same way that a lot of people are looking at me. And I respect that. I respect their opinion and they're more than entitled to that. But I'm in the building. Like, I'm training with these boys every day. My level is only going up. Like, my level's only gone up from 2 weeks. So imagine what it's going to be in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. And I know I probably haven't got that time. I need to catch up the level really quickly because, like you mentioned, this is the first time in my career being back at a Premier League club. But just seeing the pure example of Jason, and I hope he really doesn't mind me saying this, but just watching his example has been inspirational for me, just to see that if you're a good guy, you train hard, the rewards will come.
And that's why a number three is so important as well, not just for the insurance policy that a club need, but, and listen, you don't, not wishing this upon Jose Sarr or Dan Bentley, All it takes is an injury and then a red card, maybe another injury.
Of course.
And bang, you're in.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere.
And then it's about what you do with that. Mm. It's not only about earning that chance and getting that chance, it's about how you perform with that chance. And I can only say that the manager, I've had kind of a couple of conversations with him already about what he wants from me as a goalkeeper, what he wants from the whole goalkeepers union at the club, and he's only ever been positive, and I'm under the understanding of there's no prejudice about where you've come from, what you've done. If you are the best goalie, you will play. So that's all you can ask from any manager, really, and he wants the best for Wolverhampton Football Club, and so do I. So if I'm the best solution, or Jose's the best solution, we all get behind Jose, we all get behind Dan. That's the kind of union that Tony's put together.
Just to finish on the facilities, Jack Stevens said the other day, he's at Cambridge now, of course, they had a pre-season behind closed doors friendly at the Spurs training ground. And he, yeah, just that there. He was talking about the facilities, but he mentioned the food. And he was like, the food is just incredible. It goes up another level. Am I right in thinking that you are vegan?
No, not anymore.
You're not?
Yeah, not anymore, no. So I've been to see like a nutritionist guy, and I've done like the blood work to see like my intolerances. So I've done like some blood intolerances with food and drink and stuff like that. So yeah, a few of my intolerances were like soya and a couple of other things quite heavily like involved in the vegan diet. So the nutritionist basically said to me, like, if you're not doing this for animal reasons or animal protection reasons, which obviously was quite high on my list, you take a bit of a notice when you're doing the vegan thing. So but yeah, he said, if you're not doing that, then he said, you're not getting quite the benefit that you think you are out of it. So it was tough for me to hear that. But at the same time, like, I've been kind of, I introduced fish for a long time and now I'm kind of back with meat as well. But yeah, I couldn't be a vegan at this place. Some of the food they put on is
really
sensational. Yeah, honestly, it's been, do you know what? It's quite weird. Actually, one of my good friends, Jeb Wallace, he mentioned that to me. So he recently signed at West Brom. And the first thing he said was, the biggest difference you'll notice is the food. And I was like, mate, I'm going to a Premier League club and you're talking about the chefs. Like, I think I'll notice a few more things, like maybe the stadiums and things like that. And he went, mate, honestly, trust me, you'll notice the food. And like, honestly, I can't thank the staff at Wolverhampton enough. Like, they've been unbelievable with me. Like, the chefs have been cooking me dinner while I've been staying in the hotel. Like, they put dinners in takeaway pots for me, and it's been unbelievable. Like, we actually, one of the chefs, like, it was funny, I went and picked up some of the food last night and I'm texting the guy, like, thank you so much. And He's like, you don't have to text me every time that I make you some food. Like, it's kind of my job. And I was like, I know, mate, but I'm just so buzzing. Like, I've had 2 years of like, so like Salford have, didn't have a chef at the time. So we were using like a takeaway food company, which we'd heat up in microwaves every lunchtime. And Salford, Newport kind of used the same thing. I don't know if the situation at Salford's changed now, but yeah, it's just to go from that to what I've gone to now. Yeah, it's been quite a jump. I've noticed the difference, but I'm lucky that there's a nutritionist there kind of watching my plate every time I put it through. Otherwise, I'll be about freestone everywhere, I think, at the minute. But yeah, shout out to Matt North. Thanks, mate, for keeping me skinny.
Finally on Wolves, you mentioned it at the top there that we might be discussing some breaking news.
Yeah.
As of when this goes out, it should have been announced recently that Tony Roberts, your coach at Wales, who you've spoken about already, and now your coach at Wolves, has moved on.
Yeah.
So he's now with AC Milan.
Yeah. Which obviously has come as a huge surprise to me when I turned up this morning and he was in his own rascal clothes when I turned up, and I thought, oh, that's quite interesting, as I pulled up in my car and he's obviously pulled me for a chat, and you kind of get the feeling it's one of us that's leaving. And I thought, with me only walking through the door 2 weeks ago, I didn't think it would be me that was on the way out already. So yeah, listen, I had an unbelievable chat with him, and It's a real strange one. Obviously, I know what a lot of people will be saying now. Obviously, he brought me to the club, and then for him to be leaving straight away, but an opportunity like AC Milan, they do not come up every 5-10 minutes for people like us, you know? So it's an unbelievable experience. And having a good chat with him in the car on the way back, obviously I had a good chat with him this morning, but to have another chat with him in the car on the way back up north was just kind of, I'd have only done what he'd have done. If I had the opportunity to go to AC Milan, I'd do it. So why would I begrudge him doing it? Although it affects me probably quite a lot. The fact that probably the only reason I'm at Wolves now, which I'm not afraid to say, the only reason I am at Wolves is because of Tony. He vouched for me, took me to the powers that be at the top at Wolverhampton and put his neck on the line for me. And I hope I've repaid what he did for me in the couple of weeks that I've been there. And obviously I can continue to do that. That's the plan moving forward. But obviously without his guidance and his stewardship, but yeah, it's a real strange one. It kind of feels a bit bittersweet. Like, on the one hand, he's a really good friend of mine, and I'm absolutely over the moon that a good friend of mine is going to be associated with AC Milan, and he's going to be back in the Champions League where he was with Arsenal all them years ago. And it's kind of been what I think is his level. I think he's the best goalkeeping coach I've worked with by some distance as well. And I don't mean that disrespectfully to any of the others that I've worked with. He's top, not only as a person, as a coach as well. So, and what he's done for me and my family by taking me to Wolves in the last 6 weeks, I will never be able to fully repay him. But I hope I've kind of gone halfway there with how I've performed and how I've handled myself around the place and what people think of me around Wolverhampton Football Club. But no, I'm absolutely buzzing for him. And whoever's in next, it just throws that same old thing that every goalkeeper goes through when the goalkeeper coach moves on, is like, who's next? Is he going to like me? What's his way of working? Is the way that he works going to be the way that I like working? And that was kind of the one thing that I was so looking forward to, being at Wolves, being with Tony every day, that I've kind of seen what sessions he put on with Wales, and I could kind of go, that's exactly how I want to work. There wasn't one thing that I would change about the way he works. And now that's kind of gone. But at the same time, he's my mate. So I'm like, oh, I'm buzzing for you, but I'm not. And I'm gutted and I'm emotional and I'm buzzing. But yeah, no, he's a great guy and he deserves all of that. And whoever comes into Wolverhampton Football Club next is going to come into a massive, massive football club. And I'm extremely looking forward to getting to work.
And by Solly March with pace. And King has made another brilliant save at the expense of Zakiri, who must have expected to see the net bulge.
Yeah, that was a save, wasn't it? It was a save and a half, that.
You said there how you like to work. You mentioned earlier as well that you like to work at 100 miles an hour. Is that your favourite way?
Every day. It took me a long time to be like that, and I'm not afraid to say that. I've said that on multiple occasions, that kind of early on in my career, I was maybe took it for granted on quite a large scale, and then kind of going into Newport and then getting that chance to go with Wales and having that realisation that I could compete at that level. The first time I went away with Wales, I was at Newport and I was kind of in and out of the team a little bit at Newport, but Tony still saw something in me to take me away. And that first kind of couple of weeks, couple of sessions with Wales, I was like, oh my God, like I can compete at this level. And that's when it all kind of clicked in my head that I thought, this is a huge opportunity now. Like if I'm actually called upon to play for Wales, like I need to be ready. And it kind of changed something in my brain overnight, that from that moment on was going to be every day I was going to leave absolutely everything I could on the pitch every day to be the best version of myself every day. It's the biggest thing I say to young goalies now, like, just love training. Just make sure you love training. Make sure you love being out there, because the chances that we get to perform in games is so small. Like, we do 90% of the work with our feet now in games, and the moments that you get a 3-4 a game to make huge saves, or one every 4 or 5 games to make match-winning saves and things like that, unless you're in a team that's struggling. So, like, just enjoy training, enjoy being part of a group that wants to push each other all the time. Like, if there's any negativity in your group, you need to source it out quickly and have a good chat with that person and just try and irk that out and just try and get it out in the open with that person as soon as possible, whether it be a coach, which I've had in the past, or whether it be another player, which I've also had in the past. Like, you need to just make sure your group is fully focused on being the best version of yourselves every day. And it sounds so corny and cliche, that sounds so American, doesn't it? Like, oh, be the best version of yourself every day. But, like, the biggest thing that I've had is all the good groups that I've gone in terms of the goalkeepers that are there and the goalkeeper coach, like, they've always got the best out of me, because I want to be better than the other guy, and the other guy wants to be better than me, and I'm pushing him and he's pushing me, and the goalie coach is pushing all of us, and I'm pushing the goalie coach and testing him. And it's always good to have that open relationship. You don't want, like, a dictator sort of figure as the goalie coach where you can't speak to him and it's his way or the highway and things like that. Like, for me now, that just doesn't work. Like, I had quite an interesting chat with Boaz Myhill when we was last away with Wales. He's doing the under-21s at Wales. He's doing the under-21s at West Brom now. And he said that, like, it's actually incredible the amount of questions that young goalies ask now, that it's almost like you have to prove to them why you're putting sessions on and what you're doing for the sessions. And I was like, how do you respond to that? And he's like, because obviously back in his day, he's not afraid to admit it, that, like, him and Fozzie would turn up after being on the bike or going to play golf, and they'd turn up the goalie session and put a session on, and they were both technically unbelievable goalkeepers. They'd put the session on and they'd go home and they wouldn't think about goalkeeper. And he's like, I've now got to write reports on every single kid after every single session. I have to report on their attitude, their application. Their parents can view the report. They can contact me about the report. And I'm like, it's nuts how quickly it's moved on from when I was a young kid. Like, from when I first went to Crystal Palace when I was 16 years old, there was actually no full-time youth team goalkeeper coach. That is such a vital key moment in your development. That, like, that is when you're doing your most learning, and to not have a full-time goalie coach, I found that extremely hard. Like, that was kind of what I was promised. Selzy was doing as much as he could, coming in at Palace and working at the time as well. Now you've gone from that, where I didn't have a full-time one, to you're talking about, like, parents can speak to the goalie coach about the boy's attitude during the day and things like that. And it's just like,
do you think it's too much?
No, I think it should have been like this for a long time. And I think that the fact that young kids and young goalies are wanting to learn, there's so much access now to goalkeeper sessions and training sessions. And I'm a huge watcher of them all. I'm watching them all the time. Me and my friends, we send them to each other and things like that. Like, oh, have you seen the latest England one? And it's just good just to watch how these pros are dedicating their life to their performances every single day, and, like, how much they're committed to improvement. And even to watch, like, some of the more experienced goalies, like, I'm sure you've seen the Margotson ones with Pickford. And even with those boys at the top level, he's still onto them about their hand position and their hand shape and trying to coach and trying to improve top level pros. So anyone who thinks they don't need to improve, I promise you, go and watch them videos. Like, there's still so much room to improve for all of us, like, from the very top level down to, like, semi-pro, you know?
The switch that you said flicked in your head when you were at Newport, you alluded to time before that. You said you'd taken advantage of, what, just being a professional footballer? Yeah. Just your lifestyle?
Yeah. I think it was more like, the easiest way to describe it was, I probably enjoyed telling people I was a professional footballer more than I actually enjoyed being a professional footballer. And I think that was a big switch in my head, that did I really want this? Did I really want this life? And going away and seeing, like, the way that the elite boys, Ramsey, Bale, Hennessy, Ward, just to use those as a small example, just off the top of my head, like, to see how they behaved and how much they loved football. How much they love talking about football. Every dinner, we talk about football. When we're out on the pitch, they want to talk about football. The constant want to improve. And it was like, wow, like, this is actually what it takes. This is how you have to behave and how you have to act to be at the very top level. And I saw that if they're doing that and they're already at the top level and I'm not at the top level and I'm not behaving like that, that is where there's a mix in communication. That's how you have to be. It's not my way. because nobody does it my way. You get like the odd freak of nature. I mean, like, it's quite well documented. Grealish isn't the top pro, but that is one in a million. That is one in a million. So for me, I was like, right, I'm going to focus on being like them, dedicating everything I've got to football. And if I'm still not good enough, I haven't failed because I've not tried hard enough. I failed because my lack of technical ability just wasn't there. And from that moment on, like, so I kind of remember like a brief conversation with Tony where I said, like, after the first Wales camp, I was like, thank you so much. Like, thank you for everything. Like, hopefully see you soon. And he was like, no, like, I'll definitely see you soon. And in my head, I was like, right, now you've got to prepare because you might have to go back with Wales again and you've got to be ready. You've got to be more ready than you were this time and you've got to be fitter. You've got to be stronger. You've got to be... And then that was it. And then I was just on the path from there, really. And then obviously we got to... That season was cut short by COVID. And then the next season, yeah, it was the playoff final where I feel like the switch flipped in me where like my weight was down, my body fat was down. I was fully focused. I'd had the whole of the coronavirus situation to think about, like, the way I was going to enter the season, how I was going to perform, how I was going to behave. And I kind of put all that into practice and obviously I saved the penalty to get us into the playoff semis and then made a good save in the playoff first leg and then got to the final. And it was a 117th minute penalty that beat us in one of the worst games in Wembley history. I think it was. I think it'll go down as, but yeah, to come so close. And then that was when obviously, yeah, it all kind of changed from there, really.
It's mad actually when you think about doing the podcast. So I spoke to Carl Leather and a few weeks ago, nice. He would have been the other goalkeeper.
He was
in that
the other
game,
goalkeeper.
Of course,
yeah. Should give away a penalty.
And of course, your time at Newport did involve. And mate, it's great to have you on because from one world record holder to another,
wow.
We can just talk about being in the Guinness Book
go.
Of Records.
Have you
mate.
Got your thing on you by any chance? Mine's in the toilet.
I saw it.
Did
I
you
saw
actually?
It as I came in. Yeah, yeah. Was it in the toilet?
Yeah. That's where she lets me keep all my memorabilia. So yeah, in the toilet. So yeah, if you're ever lucky enough to come to my house and go to the toilet like you were, then yeah, you'll see all my football memorabilia up in the toilet. Yeah, Guinness World Record. What else have I got in there? My first Wales shirt's in there, and yeah, the promotion at Millwall as well. Yeah, that shirt's in there as well. So. Yeah, what a nice toilet.
And I mean, I'd love to know what you... I know that you spoke after the game. It was against Cheltenham, wasn't it? Josh Griffiths was the on-loan goalkeeper at the time. You didn't celebrate because goalkeepers union, you wouldn't do that. What did you say to... There's a lovely picture, actually, of the two of you and you're both sort of grinning, smiling.
Obviously, I mentioned to you before that my best mate in the world, actually, I'll let him have that. My best mate is Jed Wallace and obviously he's at West Brom now and he said that he's mentioned it to Griff and like Griff kind of... pushed him to one side about it. So I don't think he was as happy as he was on the night. Obviously you can see he's got a bit of a smile on his face and it was one of those freak things, like people try and laugh and joke all the time about, oh, it must have been really windy, and that is like one in a million to go from that far to even be able to hit the target is something that we all laugh and joke about doing in training and that all the time. But as soon as it kind of come off my foot, I thought, oh god, like, I've struck that well. It was something that we'd worked on in the week that we'd leave one high on the 18-yard box and if I could boom it with a bit of wind, then we'd be in. But yeah, I think it was actually the only shot on target we had in the game as well. Yeah, we were defending for our lives. That Cheltenham team was obviously the team that got promoted as well that season with Michael Duff as manager. So obviously he's gone on to do great things and so is Griff. And obviously he's a under-21s Euro champion now as well. So yeah, he's got a massive career. I know West Brom have, obviously speaking to Boaz, West Brom have got some extremely high hopes for him. And yeah, he's a great goalie, and some of the saves he made that season were incredible, like the way he comes for crosses and things like that. So to concede one like that, I'm sure he won't let that affect him too much, apart from the fact that it's on TikTok every 5 minutes. Do you know what I mean? Honest, like, never in a million years would I dream that it'd have been me. But yeah, mad. Like when people still say it to me, like when he said it to me after the game, the boy Callum Ellis, who works for Welsh Football now actually as well, and he said, like, just let you know, we think that might be a world record. And I was like, what? Like, you don't even process that. Obviously my mind and my emotions are still so caught up in the game. Obviously I've spoke about it a bit as well. I conceded quite a softy in the game as well, which I was so disappointed about. I made a worldy save, I scored a goal, and I conceded a softy. So I had a little bit of everything. My emotions are through the roof that game. And yeah, and then obviously all the Sky Sports and Talk Sport and all that started after the game, and it was like, oh, I might have actually done something here. And it's quite funny actually, I get like a lot of birthday messages from Guinness World Book of Records on Twitter. And when I announced my move to Wolves as well, they text me saying congratulations. So yeah, I must have impressed someone over there.
And am I right in thinking you were at Pompey as a kid?
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah.
All the way through till 15.
So would Asmir have been there just, at that time?
Just, yeah, there was a bit of a... Obviously, Dave Coles, who's quite a well-known goalkeeper coach, yeah, he introduced me to Asmir a couple of times, and Asmir used to give me a few hand-me-downs when he was... because we obviously both quite big gents. Yeah, he used to give me a few hand-me-downs and stuff like that. I've obviously had a few chats with Asmir as well, but yeah, obviously I nicked it off him.
Beat the record.
I know. Two Portsmouth boys, eh? You'd have thought.
Just a quick bit of admin.
Of course.
On your time in League 2. So... Yeah. I think this is just interesting for onlookers, for fans to know, because if you were to look at your time at Newport and then look at your time at Salford, seemingly you've done pretty well. Decent number of games at Newport, flip-flopped a bit with Nick Townsend, which seems to happen with every goalkeeper that's at Newport, I think. But you've done well at both clubs, but then you've moved on from both clubs.
Yeah.
What's the story there?
Yeah, I mean, the Newport one, I came to the end of my time there regardless because of some different situations off the pitch. I'd come to my end of my time there, and even when the manager gave me the courtesy call to say that they were moving on, I knew that Joe was signing from 3 or 4 weeks before anyway. So I was like, I understood what this call was, and it was obviously, I'd got what I kind of wanted to get out of it, which was to be in Wales, experience the world. Like my mum and my nan are both fully Welsh. Like my nan speaks fluent Welsh as well. So to kind of be in that Welsh culture, I'd got what I wanted out of it. I wanted to be in that environment, in that scenario, to be part of that Welsh setup was always in my dream. I've spoke about that a lot as well, that it was so random that we'd had a letter through when I was 16 to say that if you are Welsh, can you declare to play for Wales? Because of the pool of players that they were having to choose from was so small, could you declare? So my mum had declared me for Wales to say, like, Tom's really interested, and they'd kind of like pushed back on it a couple of times. And then I ended up getting my England call up. So it was like I'd kind of flip-flop between that, and I was like, oh, I don't know what to do. So I ended up doing the England thing, obviously with the advice of some agents early in my career, which is what they advise all young players to do with, obviously to benefit themselves, which is fair enough. And then obviously to go into the Welsh first team setup, having not played 17s, 18s, 19s, 20s or 21s, to go straight into the first team setup, it was like all my kind of dreams had come true that I wanted to come true when I was 16, to kind of be part of that setup all the way through. So to be in that, and obviously I've never have lived in Wales, and to be part of that, it felt right at the time. And then the Salford one was mad. I was in Portsmouth at the time, staying at my mum's, and my partner was living in Manchester, but she was from Liverpool. So I was actually on the way up to Manchester for her birthday. It was a birthday on the 3rd of July. I was actually on my way up, and in the car, my phone goes off, unknown number. It's Gary Bowyer, Salford manager at the time. Oh, hi, mate. Like, obviously, your agent says that you're on the way up to Manchester. Have you got boots and gloves in your car? And I was like, yeah. What? It's still not processed in my head. And he's like, oh, do you want to come and do a couple of days training? Like, Carlo Nash, the goalkeeper, he's very interested to have a look. We know that you're available, etc. And four days later, I'd signed. So to go from, like, me and my partner worried about doing long distance again, or is she going to have to move with a job, etc., I was now on her doorstep. So it was crazy. It was crazy just to think that, like, that is such a random, like, obviously, you know, doing some work with players as well, that never happens, that it happens also perfectly like that. So obviously it was a big move for me coming from Portsmouth to Manchester, but I was more than happy to do it. Like, me and my partner were so happy at the time. Like, we lived together and it was perfect. And then going into the second year, obviously change of manager at Salford, and it was a completely new style of play. They went down a different route. Obviously, it's former Man United academy manager. And I felt like I'd had a good start. Like, I think we were like fourth or fifth with the defensive record. We were sixth in the league at the time. We were doing all right. We had a good amount of wins. I'd made a good amount of saves, and saves at important times, and playing well and trying to adapt to his style of play. And then I think it might have been the 2nd or 3rd of January, he just pulled me in the office and he said, oh, you'd have seen Kenzie here training today. And I was like, yeah, I understand that. He was like, he's going to be the number one now. And I was like, oh, like, you're not even going to give us a chance to battle it out. You're not even going to give me, like, I've got no qualms at admitting this. Like, I had quite a poor game against Bradford on New Year's Day, which I know, which happens to goalies, happens to everyone. But I just didn't expect it to all move that quickly. And I thought, oh, okay. And it kind of took me by surprise. And I kind of said to him in the meeting that I'd be actively trying to leave as soon as possible. And he was like, oh, yeah, we understand that. Like, we think you deserve to play, but it's just not here. It's not right for us at this time, etc. Which was mad. And then, so I've come off. Anyway, I'm still part of the squad. We're going into the game against Northampton on the Saturday. and it's on TV, and I'm thinking, okay, the pitch is like absolutely horrendous. And if it wasn't on Sky, it wouldn't have been played. And during the game, Lee Burge for Northampton gets injured. And I'm sat there on the bench thinking like, oh my God, like the stars have all aligned. Like this game shouldn't be on. The stars are aligning in front of my eyes. Like, so I had a good chat with like another one of my good friends, Mitch Pinnock, who plays for Northampton. I said like, listen, let me know how bad that injury is. Like, I'll come, even if it's a month, even if it's an emergency loan. Like, I'll come. I just need to be back on the bandwagon again. Like, I can help you boys. Like, the game was so tight as well. And I think, like, obviously, it's no secret, Kenzie actually made a mistake in the game as well to go to 1-1. And I think Salford ended up winning the game 2-1, which is a massive win in the playoff race. So it was mad. And then, so obviously, that was on the Saturday. And by the Wednesday, it was done. I was on my way to Northampton in the car driving down. And I'm just thinking like, oh, this is an unbelievable opportunity. All the words that the manager had said, like the typical, if you do well, you stay in. Burgey's injury is going to be about 4 or 5 weeks. If you do well, you stay in. So I've gone there, 8 games, 4 clean sheets, a couple of good saves, played well with my feet. Obviously all the skill set that I'd learned from the manager at Salford that I'd never really done in my career. A lot of playing out and forcing it through gaps and things like that. So I've done quite well. And then kind of had a meeting with the manager, and he just said that Burgey was going to go straight back in as soon as he was fit. In my head, I'm thinking like, you just cannot catch a break. Do you know what I mean? Like in my head, I'm thinking, what have I done? Like what voodoo doll have I pressed in the wrong place here? Like, this is crazy. Like then in my head, I just thought, okay, well, you're only going to get out what you put in now. So you've just got to go at it, hammer and tong, and train your artist, and you'll only become a better goalie for this experience sort of thing. And then obviously it ends up in a promotion, and then obviously Salford end up nearly getting promoted as well. But it's always been funny, like in my career, I always think that, like, and it's quite funny, I said this to Amy and I've said it to Selzy on numerous occasions, that I don't think my training level and my performance have always correlated into the way that I perform in games. And I don't know if that's to do with nerves. I don't know if that's to do with concentration. I don't know if that's to do with the way I'm preparing for games mentally, emotionally, physically. Am I sleeping right? But it's just never quite like, a lot of the lads who I've trained with have always said like, oh, like in training, like you do really well and like you make unbelievable saves. But then it's like, it's never fully correlated for me in the games. I just don't know. I've never been able to put my finger. Obviously, I mentioned there about like, it's going to sound really like I'm passing the blame onto someone else. But like I mentioned about like the microwave meals, like during the training week and things like that. And like, am I sleeping right? Obviously, now I'm settled, a bit more settled, like in this house with my partner. It's been like kind of the first year of my career, and like my performances were good, and I thought, oh, like this is me now. Like I'm settled in this house. Like me and my partner were settled. Like this might be the thing that my concentration needs, just to really relax. And then obviously that didn't work. And then I'm to and from on the M6 all the time down to Northampton, and that was a real tough one for me as well, to be able to generate that level of performance in training every day as well, trying to keep everything happy, my family life and my football life. But yeah, it was tough. It was tough, and I've never been able to like fully figure out why I can't achieve the same level that I do in training in a match day.
I think the disruption is quite clear, right? That correlates with what you're saying.
Yeah, of course.
But you mentioned, I mean, you said nerves there. At the very top, you said when you got the call from Wolves that instantly you were thinking of negative thoughts.
Yeah.
That must be something that you're, that's something you're working on.
Yeah. Oh, every day. And that's one thing that at Wolves, there is no excuses. There is club psychologist, there is club nutritionist, there is everybody there is dedicated 100% to making sure that every first team player, every youth team player, every under 21 player is achieving the absolute maximal out of their career that is possible. There is no egos in the way. Everybody cannot do enough for you. So now I'm saying to Selzy, like we had quite an honest and a frank conversation, and he said, listen, there is a very realistic possibility you're going to go there for 2 years and not play a single game of football. Are you okay with that? And I said, I think that the knowledge I will gain out of the 2 years of me being there will far surpass any level of performance. The offers I had were League Two to play a couple of, like a League Two number one and a League One number two. The knowledge and the experience of what I'll gain travelling with the first team and being around the first team at Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club will far surpass anything that those clubs could offer me. And he was sceptical at first, and then he thought, I think he had a good chat. Obviously, he's quite close with Remy, who does the same thing at Palace, and he's quite close with Lonners, who does the same thing at Everton. And they kind of said to him, listen, like there is nothing that can replace what Tom is about to learn in those 2 years. And even in 2 weeks, I'm completely different. I'm sleeping better, I'm eating better, I understand that the way that nutrition works. I understand what I've got to put in my body to what I've got to do to get out. You go in the gym, there's every single piece of equipment you could ever imagine. My strength levels are through the roof. My agility levels are through the roof. And they're all just like, wow, like you really want to learn all of this, don't you? And I'm like, I'm just hit. I just want to soak up as much of this knowledge, because really my contract is for 2 years. And if at the end of the 2 years, they don't want to extend, I want to make sure that those 2 years I've gone from League Two goalie to a goalie that, at very minimum, if Wolverhampton Wanderers don't want to keep me, which I hope they do, but if they don't want to keep me, that my level now is Championship. I want to go to the Championship. I want to show everybody, because I know, I've always known in my head that I can perform at that level, but I just don't know if my consistency would put me there. So now I'm thinking, all right, at the end of this 2 years, soak up all this knowledge, learn as much as you can from all these top level elite coaches, elite people, and just correlate it, and just translate it all into what you do every day. Like, you've been given the best learning tool you'll ever have in your life. Just don't waste this now, you know? And that was the only conversation that is like keeping me so focused every day. Like, the way that he speaks to me in the gym is like, oh, do you mind doing this? And do you mind? And I'm like, no, just teach me everything. I want to see everything. If there's the times that the saunas are open at the training ground, the times that the cryo chambers are open at the training ground, just pull me and tell me they're open. Tell me that, like, I want to be in there. I want to be doing it. Like, the top boys are doing it. I want to be doing it. I want to be matching. I want to be symmetrical to whatever the top boys are doing. Like, if one of the lads is eating a certain thing and you've seen a big change, tell me. Like, I just want to soak up all this knowledge. Like, I'm here to learn. Like, I'm 28 years old. I'm not 15. I understand that. I'm not somebody you can mold and do this, but like, you can teach this old dog new tricks. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, just tell me everything. I don't want any stone to be unturned. Like, and just even the difference in preparation. So like now, for example, we're going to stay in hotels for every game, home games, away games. You stay in a hotel for every game.
For home games.
Yeah. So like now I'm thinking in my head, okay, well, let's see how that works. So, okay, let's see how I wake up. Let's obviously check this, like I wear the Apple Watch when I sleep to check the sleep patterns and things like that. Okay, let's see how the sleep pattern improves. Does it improve? Do I feel more awake, more alive, sleeping in a different bed to my partner the night before a game? Is that it? Is that the thing that's going to change me? Is that the thing that's going to take, like, and I'm just ready to learn all this stuff as soon as the games start coming thick and fast, as they do in the Premier League. I've got my notepad ready. Like, as a metaphor, I'm ready to learn. I want to learn all of it. I want to sit next to Jose when he's having his pre-match and go, oh, okay, what are you having then? Or sit next to Mateus Cunha, who plays for Brazilian national team. Okay, what are you having for pre-match? All right, what are you doing differently to me? Why are you at the top level? Why is this my first crack at having a go at the top level? And just to kind of pick different bits. Like, I'm not just going to sit and go, oh, well, Jose's had two eggs, some beans and a sausage, so I'm going to have that, because that might not work for me. But if I can pick little bits off Jose and pick little bits off Dan, and there's obviously going to be a new goalie coach walking through the door, I want to pick his brains as well. There's obviously, I know the manager's Spanish. It could be a Spanish goalkeeping coach. I don't know yet. That would be a whole new learning experience for me. Again, that's a completely new way of working. It's all over the internet how obviously Iñaki Caña works, and a lot of Spanish goalkeepers take him as like kind of the gospel of goalkeeping coaching. So that will be a whole new learning experience for me again. I just want to pick all these bits. And by the end of the 2 years, I can already feel I'm going to be a completely new level of goalkeeper. And hopefully it translates into me being Wolves' goalkeeper for the next 4, 5, 6, 7 years. And that's my dream. That is what I want. That is what I've set out to do. But if it's not, then I'm going to be ready for whatever challenge. And it's not going to be going back to League Two or going back to League One. It's going to be going to the Championship or going back to the Premier League, which is what I want to see as my level going forward.
Nice ball.
It's a lovely ball. It's a very good header.
It's an even better save. What a save.
How has he reached that?
And Superman diving to the left. Nice big strong hand by Tom King to palm that away.
Just a few more bits to cover off. Loans. Two loans I'd quite like to speak of. One... Sorry.
No problem.
One is a loan you had when you were in non-league. And the reason that I want to speak about this is because it was apparently regarded as one of the biggest on-field controversies seen in non-league football. So the game with Braintree, where you were apparently described by their manager as trying to be clever and letting it go in, where a throw-in taken by Geisley has gone to... No, sorry, taken by... You were at Braintree, weren't you, on loan?
Yeah, yeah.
that the ball has gone out by Braintree because one of the players was injured. The lad's then thrown it back to the fella from Guiseley and he's lobbed it over your head and it's gone in.
So the full story behind this now, that goal that they scored was to go 1-0 up against us. We were chasing playoffs. They were trying to survive relegation. We ended up scoring a late goal to get the game to 1-1. They actually survived that season by 1 point. They didn't get relegated by 1 point. So if they had given us the goal and we'd have scored the extra one, they'd have been relegated. So that is the full story behind. Like, and I didn't realise that until about 6 to 8 months ago that a good friend of mine brought that up on a different show.
Yeah.
And he said, guys, they actually survived by 1 point that season. And that was the goal that kept them up. But that's kind of the level that you're working at. These boys, if they're relegated back down to the Conference League North, it's a completely different wage structure for a lot of the players. The manager might get the sack. They're fighting for their lives. But then you see, obviously, in a different scenario, when Aston Villa play Leeds on telly a few years ago, in that different scenario, both teams going for promotion, he just lets them score another goal. But obviously, that didn't even go down too well either. Did it with Pontus Janssen, but... And then I think, did Leeds ended up not getting promoted that year? And Aston Villa did, I think.
Right, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, with Steve Bruce's manager. So was that the dip? Do you know what I mean? And it's just like, yeah, that was a mad moment. And for anyone that's seen the clip that's listening.
Well, they should. So you go on the clip. I mean, just type in Guiseley, Braintree.
Yeah, crazy. If anyone who knows me knows that I'm not clever.
I was shocked.
Manager trying to say I'm trying to be clever. Yeah, I've been trying to be clever my whole life, mate. But it's not come off for me yet. But yeah, no, like any goalkeeper that receives the token back pass. A lot of players now, you'll see a lot more of a trend. They kick it out of play for a goal kick to give you less of advantage, which is fair. They're entitled to do what they want. But yeah, that player, he knows what he was doing.
There is no way that you... Because I obviously read about it and I thought, I wonder if it's online.
Yeah.
Found it straight away.
There you go.
I was shocked at the fact that he's, I mean, the height that you don't pass it back like that.
Yeah.
But the commentary on the YouTube clip suggests that, yeah, that you were asleep at the switch and that, oh, you know, he's not really belted it back to him. Yes, he has.
Yeah.
He's absolutely, I mean, he's not properly drilled it and pinged it, but there's enough on it.
He knows what he's doing. He's tried to push the line a little bit there and obviously it worked for that. I think they were relegated the next season, so have that.
The other loan, AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah.
This was potentially a turning point. Again, we go back to the switch at Newport. I actually spoke to a lot of AFC Wimbledon fans during Rich and mine, our days on Love Sport. We did an AFC Wimbledon fan show.
Yeah.
And you cropped up a couple of times because they obviously adore Aaron Ramsdale, who then came in and took the glass from you.
Yeah. Listen, it was a real interesting period of my life that I don't regret. How would you say it? I don't regret for all the wrong reasons. So I don't regret anything that I've done because off the field, it was the most mental 5 months I've ever had. I wasn't playing professional football. I was being a young lad with a little bit of money who thought no, I was untouchable. That was what I was doing. But the lessons that it taught me now are invaluable because I've not had to go through that stage now where it's not irreversible for my career. So at that point, it was a complete low moment when obviously I was sent back and then obviously Aaron had gone in and Aaron had done so well and Aaron had kept them up basically single-handedly. I'm not sure any of those players would mind me saying that. Basically single-handedly kept them up. He's obviously what he's gone on to do since has been unbelievable. But I look back on them moments of my career and I think like there is no teacher that could have taught me the lessons that that lesson taught me in terms of professionalism, learning every day. I was given the golden ticket. Ashley Bayes, the goalkeepers that he's produced over the last 4, 5, 6 years. And I mean, he's just sold another one to Manchester City for a record fee.
Spike Brits.
Yeah. I was given the golden ticket of goalkeeper coaching. There you go. Go and work with the geezer that takes all these goalies from one level to the next level to the next level. Go and do it. There you go. Go and have it. And I threw it back in his face and my face to say, I know more than you. I don't need you. I'm this, I'm that. To be fair, he texted me the other day actually about obviously the Wolves thing saying congratulations and I've spoke to him through friends of mine and spoke to him since and I've kind of always relayed the message that I was gutted now that I couldn't work with him now, how I behave now, how I train now, the level I perform at now, what I do now. Like when we played Salford the other week, last season, he was very complimentary in my size and the way that I'd lost weight and how I looked and how I performed and how I carried myself. And partly is down to him for all the wrong reasons. It's down to him, the fact that he tried to show me all them things And I just was like, no, mate, I know more than you. And but that is a very common theme in young pros. And like I said, I'm extremely grateful to everyone that they managed to kind of pull me to one side and say, listen, this is you're going down a one-way path of nothing here. You're going to be nothing within 4 or 5 months. And obviously I was released from Millwall at the end of that season and still kind of had a little bit of that in me that I'll be fine, I'll end up somewhere, I'll end up doing this. And then obviously going to Newport and realising that I was in a battle, obviously, with Nick Townsend, and then that kind of pushed me on again. And I was like, oh, and then obviously the Wales thing happened quite early on in that season. So that was when kind of the switch really flipped for me. But yeah, the Wimbledon one's strange. I mean, it's funny, actually, like there was a fan thing that tagged me in. Obviously, Wimbledon would link with some goalies this summer. I think they've signed one, Alex Bass has gone there, yeah. So they've obviously been linked with a few goalies. And I think a fan account must have said, oh, would we consider Tom to come back? Obviously, Tom's performed at a high level in League Two for a lot of years. And one fan, like, it's quite funny, actually, he was like, no, he's rubbish. And the fan said, like, well, Tom was with us 5 years ago. I think he's done a little bit of improving since then. And the fan went, no, still rubbish. So I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, okay, that's really good. Thanks, mate. That's really positive. But that's kind of like, me and Selzy talk about this all the time. Like this saying, he's not for me. And I completely get it. And when people try and justify it and they say, oh, I watched him play 4 years ago. Oh, no good. I'm thinking, do you understand the laws of how things work? Like, this is a young kid who wasn't ready. You don't know what he had going on off the pitch the day that you saw him play. You don't know what the conditions were like on the pitch. You don't know how he was feeling mentally, how he was feeling physically. You've never worked with this person. You've never seen him on a day-to-day basis. And just because you, on an off chance, went and saw him 4 years ago and he played poorly, he's not for you. And I've never been able to wrap my head around that logic in terms of, like, and I get it, you should perform every game and at your highest level, but it's just not possible. That's not possible. Unless you're the top, top, top players. Who, to use Alisson Becker for an example, I don't think I've ever seen him have a bad game. He makes no mistakes. He's incredible. But just to have that sense of, like, oh, I saw him 4 years ago and he was rubbish, so he must still be rubbish now. And the irony of it is, I've played Wimbledon 3 times since then. I've not conceded a goal. I'm man of the match twice. And he's like, no, still rubbish. And I'm like, all right, mate, like, what more can you do? You know what I mean? Like, what more can you do?
It's staggering. It's many a football fan, I suppose. I was talking to someone the other day, Aaron Ramsdale. And even once they prove it at the highest level, honestly, mate, I saw him at Chesterfield and he was awful. Right, so like you said, that's just a snapshot of a young goalkeeper's career. Look, he's proven to you.
Incredible.
Not that he needs to prove it to you, but he's done it. And what you went through at Wimbledon, that's your blip, right? Which every goalkeeper needs to an extent. You can look back at that.
Like I said, the lesson
positively.
Yeah, it's massive.
Yeah, because you speak to so many goalkeepers. James Trafford will say it about Accrington. Tom Heaton was on the podcast saying, you know, I had a couple of loan spells. I thought I was it and I was okay.
Yeah.
You had those bad loan spells, which teach you
everything.
Valuable lessons.
Everything. Everything I needed to know about the career path of how I'm going to get the best out of myself from this point moving forward was taught to me at AFC Wimbledon. And also, you're dealing with a club in huge transition. I think that summer we'd signed like nine or 10 players. I think I was the only one who started on the first day of the new players of a season that they were nearly relegated the season before. And it took a goalkeeper of Aaron Ramsdale's stature and 4 or 5 more signings in the January to keep them up on the last day by a point. So it wasn't like I was going into a team that was going to finish top of the league and was predicted to be champions of League One that season and was going to fly through it. And it was only me, I was the only reason letting them down. Do you know what I mean? There was a lot of cogs in that wheel that were wrong at the time. I mean, obviously the manager was sacked that season as well. And they had a couple of managerial changes since then as well. And then obviously to be relegated 2 seasons after. But then, like, I look back on that time and I'm so grateful I got it wrong, which sounds like such a mental thing to say, but I look back on that time and I'm like, I kind of pieced together where I've done all my learning throughout my whole career. Salford, I did a lot of learning. Newport, I did a lot of learning about probably who I am as a person and what I need from manager, coaches. I did a lot of my learning about that. And then my most was Wimbledon. I look back at that time and I'm forever grateful. And I am sorry that it affected Wimbledon in such a negative way, being in the relegation battle that season. But me being selfish, I look back on that and I'm thinking, oh my God, like, thank God I wasn't at a time like now where I'm going through that stage where I feel like I can't learn. I feel like I'm better than everyone. thank God it was then when it's reversible. I was able to pull myself from, for lack of a better term, 6 feet under. I was able to pull myself out and say, listen, this isn't you. This isn't the way that you want to work. You being led a different life. Do it the way you want to do it now. And yeah, thanks to Ashley Bayes.
And perhaps without that, you wouldn't be where you are now, you see, which is a nice way to kind of end the podcast. Your goalkeeping knowledge, by the way, is very decent.
Thank you. That, do you know what? And I can't take any credit for that. That's all Selzy.
Really?
Oh, he is an encyclopedia. If you want if you want to know anything about goalkeeping, ring me or Selzy.
If you ring Selzy, you won't get him off the phone.
Yeah, exactly. If you've got 4 hours spare, ring Selzy.
Last couple of bits before you get to the quiz.
Of course.
And then Richard Lee's final question.
Of course.
There is a video on your Twitter, which I implore anyone who follows you, or even people who don't follow you, to go on your Twitter and view it. This has nothing to do with goalkeeping, but I watched it this morning. I think I'd watched it before, actually, but I remembered it today.
Didn't realise it was me. I get a lot of that, but people didn't realise it was me.
Mate,
yeah.
I was in. It's good. I'll say I was in tears, but I was laughing a lot, and I watched it again, and I was laughing a lot. So this is you swimming after your dog,
yep.
And it's not so much you, it's your mum.
She's the real star of the show.
Oh, mate, it is.
It's still unbelievable to me, and me and my sister still talk about this. I'm like, so my sister's dog is in the, for people that have seen it and people that haven't, my sister's dog is in the lake. So the backstory of it is, Bagel, my dog, has gone after a group of young swan puppies, I suppose. I don't know, whatever better way to say it. Yeah.
Cygnets?
Yeah, cygnets.
The adults or the babies?
Yeah. So gone after a group of young cygnets, and obviously the mother or the father has taken offence to that. But somehow there is a situation that's occurred that my dog is chasing the swan. So me and my family haven't seen the dog in a couple of minutes. I'm thinking like, and then I can hear this like really random flapping from the lake. So I pop my head around the lake and it's my dog chasing the swan. So I look around at my mum and my sister. They're obviously in no rush to get there, to get their shoes off, to get in after Bagel, to go and pull him out of the lake. So I'm like, oh, I guess this responsibility lies on me. No problem. So I've dived in, at which point the swan is turned on me. I'm pulling Bagel out of the lake and the swan is now coming after me, at which point my mum lets off what can only be described as Frosty the Tiger noises to try and scare this swan away, which is mental. But the thing that's still to this day, all of this is going on and my sister decides, phone out, camera on, this is TV gold. And do you know what? It's one of the funniest things. Like everywhere I go now, any new person I meet, oh, you're the swan geezer. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. Oh, your mum with them noises. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's your sister that says, kill it. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, that's all me. It's all my family. But yeah, it was actually random. So I'm sat in Northampton 6 months ago. Yeah, 6 months, 5 months ago, I sat in Northampton and like it's a dark, dingy day. And I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to stick it on TikTok. It's been on Twitter a couple of years. I'm going to stick it on TikTok. 32.1 million views later.
32.1 million?
Yeah.
You are kidding me.
I'm still
me.
Like, as we're sat here now, I'm watching my phone go off. I'm still getting comments, likes, reposts, reshares.
No way.
32 million.
I thought you were going to say 1,000.
32 million views, yeah. 4.6 million likes, 52,000 comments. It's like,
it is brilliant.
My girlfriend laughs all the time. She's like, oh, isn't it funny? Like, because at the start, I started replying to a lot of the comments because it was a lot of my friends who followed me and I hadn't posted anything. And then it just got way out of hand, like the Jacksonville Jaguars commenting and things like that. Like, is that one of ours in the background making those noises? And it was mental. All these influencers messaging, like, can we repost? Can we do this? Like,
do what you want.
I was just sat there on watching Bargain Hunt. You know what I mean? Just sat there on my TV watching Bargain Hunt. And it is like going, come back from training one day. Yeah. And it had about 5,500 notifications on my phone. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I think I've done a thing. I think I've cracked it. I've cracked the TikTok code somehow, you know? So,
it is very funny.
Yeah, Bagel's alive, Bagel's well. Isn't it funny? Good. Like, you still, like, we still speak about the comments, like, a large portion of the comments are like, this is why you shouldn't have dogs off a lead. And I'm thinking, like, mate, like, come on,
that's
like,
what
just
you take.
See the funny side, mate. Come on, do you know what I mean? Lighten up. No one was hurt, nearly, but no one was hurt.
Yes, absolutely go and watch it if you haven't seen it already. Twitter handle is
TomKing_.
Excellent. It's at very top of the profile. So if you haven't seen it, make sure you do. We always have to ask this too. You were at Millwall for a period of time.
Yeah.
Stephen Bywater. What, he was there, but I don't know whether he would have crossed over.
I caught the end of him, yeah. Okay. Wow. Character.
The end of him was enough.
Do you get this a lot? I'm assuming you get this a lot.
Yes, well, we have to ask everyone. Yeah.
Incredible. Mm. Incredible. So Denzel, I think it's Gerard, how you pronounce his second name, was a goalkeeper who was there for a long time with Stephen. And he used to tell me a lot of the stories about Stephen. So I've got one. So anyway, I think they're going on like a pre-season tour. And like the lads are obviously all packed with their bags and stuff going onto the plane. And I think Stephen has got on with this like huge backpack, like this huge, like, and all the lads are like, he's walked in and nobody's really said anything. So anyway, one of the boys has collared him and said, Stephen, what is that? And he's like, oh, it's a parachute. Like getting onto this plane. He's like, oh yeah, that's a parachute. He goes, well, if the plane's going down, what are you lot going to do? I'm going to jump off because I've got my parachute. And all the lads, like, apparently are in, like, stunned silence. Like, what on earth is going on? Like, this geezer actually thinks he's going to base jump out of this plane. if this plane starts going down at whatever speed of knots, he thinks he's just going to, like, literally, like, open the door like it's his front door and just jump out and pull his parachute and he'll be all right. But I've heard all sorts of stories. Like, he used to, like, leave tins of beans in his car and things like that in case, like, the apocalypse would come.
Oh, yeah, full-on survival kits.
Yeah, he had full survival kits and... Obviously, there's the story about what he'd done to his next-door neighbours that's plastered all over the Daily Mail and things. And, yeah, lads used to say to me, oh, they'd be like, oh, yeah, Stephen gets in at, like, 6:30 to the training ground and does, like, he has a bath, runs himself a bath, as he, like, does yoga. He used to pick one of my friends up going to Burton. He used to pick Matt Lund up going to Burton. And he said that, like, the pick-up time would be, like, 8:15. He said Bywater would be outside his house at 6:45. He's like, oh, sorry, mate, I didn't realise if there was going to be any traffic. I didn't want to be late. He's like... Mate, we don't leave for 1 hour and 15 minutes. Like, do you want to come in? And he's like, no, I'll just sit here. I'll be all right. Like, honestly, but like for the very small dealings I had with him, incredible guy.
Yeah.
Incredible guy, which I'm sure is the resounding feeling about Stephen. And yeah, incredible guy, incredible goalkeeper. And I think his interview after the Derby promotion will go down as one of the greatest ever, which I watch on a regular occurrence. Anyway, he's unbelievable. But that's what goalies are. That's what goalies are. And that's what goalies have been in every club. I'm sure that, you get the odd few that don't take well with all the lads, but generally we are kind of the jokers and we kind of pick a lot of lads up because we're not kind of in that circle with a lot of the lads, so we're kind of like a fresh voice coming in and we can have a bit more of a relaxed attitude and our trainings are very different. And yeah, I think that's kind of the resounding feeling that I've had in my career anyway, that I've gone in and tried to keep a light-hearted view on things. And yeah, Stephen definitely had that.
Ready for a quiz?
Let's go.
Tom or Thomas?
Tom.
Tom.
Only my mum calls me Thomas.
Right. Tom King, how well do you know you?
Oof.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, now we're cooking.
It's exciting stuff. Cue the music. Who did you make your pro debut against and what was the score?
Nottingham Forest and we lost 2-1.
Correct. Who was in goal for Forest that night?
Stephen Henderson.
He was lobbed, wasn't he, from the halfway 45 line?
45 yards, Sean Williams.
Lovely goal. What day is International Goalkeeper Day?
Oh, I've posted this twice and I get
a lot.
So hammered.
Yeah, you post it a lot.
I get so hammered for it. It's recent as well because I've posted one recently. I'm going to say 20th of June.
Bit before April the 14th.
April the 14th. Yeah, I post that a lot. I just feel like, give me some recognition, you know, out here doing a hard job.
You saved a penalty in your debut for Newport County.
Yeah.
Who was the taker?
Nicky Maynard, because he signed for Newport the year later and I never let him forget it. Even when he'd take him in training and score all of them, I go, well, I've already saved one in a proper game, so it doesn't matter now.
You were at Stevenage for a bit on loan?
I was.
What was the sponsor on the front of the shirt?
Oh, yeah, no clue. Got me there. Go on.
Astute Electronics.
Astute Electronics. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, some characters over there as well.
Yeah, I bet there were. How many, now I think I've got this right.
Go on.
How many EFL clean sheets have you kept in your career? It's a whole number, a round number.
Is it?
Yeah.
50.
Oh, very close. Plus 10.
60?
Yes.
I know I'm about 1 in 3.
So I've got a breakdown here.
Yeah.
So 5 at Millwall, 4 at Stevenage.
Yeah.
5 at AFC Wimbledon,
yeah.
18 at Newport, 23 at Salford and 5 at Northampton.
Yeah, it's not bad, huh?
Pretty good.
if me and Selzy kind of have a rule, if you can be 1 in 3, but then there's also a big argument, this is a whole different story that he loves talking about, that kind of clean sheets are like the falsest stat in football.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
Kind of, it doesn't always tell the full story. So I think a one that tells a bit more of a story is like saves per shots on target ratio, which there's a couple of good websites that hammer that out. And I follow a guy on Twitter that's created the goalkeeper XG, the expected saves and things like that. Because even the shots on target thing doesn't always tell a full story, because
it could be a 30-yard dribbler.
You could be Edison who concedes one shot a game, and if he concedes every single one, you're going to have 100%, but what he does without the ball saving is worth way more than what he can do with it. Do you know what I mean? So,
and we peddle the narrative, to be fair, of clean sheets with the Clean Sheet Club.
Of course.
But it is good. It's just a bit of fun. But there are, yeah, it's hard to quantify, isn't it? You've got XGA, you've got PSXG now, which is post-shot expected goals.
It's all gone to a new level. But I knew that me and Selzy said, like, if you can kind of be 1 in 3, so if I'm at, I think I'm at 212, 213 games, something like that now. So 60, yeah. 60 is about nearly... Yeah, just under. A few more clean sheets. When I get in, I'll keep a few more and I'll be all right, yeah.
What is the distance of the world record that you hold?
96.04 metres.
I think it's 0-1.
0-1?
Yes.
Oh, have I lost a couple of metres?
I could be wrong.
I think it might be 0-1. Yeah? Yeah, I think you might be right. Yeah, 106 yards. Yeah.
105 yards.
Is it 105? Yeah. Rounding up.
What number did you wear on your loan spell at AFC Wimbledon?
12?
No trick questions here, Tom. Number one.
Do you know what? I tend to try and not choose number one wherever I go. But they made it, now you're saying it, they made it actually a massive thing that, like, listen, we signed you to be number one, you're going to be number one. And I was like, I don't really like one.
Why don't you like one?
Do you know what? And I've always, it's all just in my head, which anyone who knows me knows that I'm anything that I can get a little advantage of. So I chose 31. Was originally, this is the most random thing you'll ever hear, 31 originally was because 13 is unlucky, 31 is the opposite of unlucky.
Right.
So I'm lucky.
Okay.
And that was how I'd convince myself that it was right in my head. And then everywhere I've gone, I kind of see that, like, because you remember the old saying, train like number two, even if you're number one, train like you're the number two, pushing all the time. In my head, I've kind of thought, like, anytime I've seen the one, it's been not bad luck, but, like, obviously from Wimbledon, I'm like, no, I can't be one. I've got to be this because I want to feel like the number two. I want to feel like somebody else has the number one and I'm chasing them and I want to be better than them and I don't want to feel like they're doing that to me because then they might get an advantage of me and things like that. And then obviously I ended up taking one at Newport who'd basically done the same thing to me and then was in and out and in and out. And then, yeah, so now anywhere I've gone, tried not to do the same thing at Salford. They did the same thing to me and I thought, fuck. Jesus. And then obviously I took 40 at Northampton and thought, oh, this feels better. 4 clean sheets, 8 games, this feels better. I'm chasing. And it still didn't work. So now I'm back to 40 at Wolverhampton as well because he said that I can't have 31. So I'm like, do you know what? The numbers thing, I've just given up with it now.
Yeah.
Just put whatever you want on there and I'll just train my hardest and see what happens. Do you know what I mean?
I did not realise that question was going to get such an answer.
Yeah, I know.
The unleavened bread made from chickpea flour and olive oil, which is widely regarded as the national dish of Gibraltar, is known as what?
Oh, Jesus. Really?
Well, you lived there for quite a while.
I did,
right?
Yeah, I did.
You must have had it.
I can actually qualify. I actually qualified to play for
there
Gibraltar because the UEFA shortened their time in education to 3 years, which is what I've done. But yeah, no clue. Rye bread?
Calentita. Did you have it?
I'm assuming at some point I'd have had some calentita, but yeah, not that I remember.
Okay, and the final question, can you name every manager you've worked under since turning pro at Millwall?
Since turning pro at Millwall, Neil Harris, Neil Hardley, Wally Downs, Darren Sol, Dino Manmaria, Michael Flynn, Gary Bowyer, Neil Wood, John Brady, Julian Lopetegui. Oh, there's one more.
There is one more.
Where am I missing? Go on.
Did you say Neil Harris?
Yeah, at the start.
Did you say Ian Holloway?
Oh, yeah.
I knew it was a Millwall one.
Oh, because obviously I was at Crystal Palace with him as well. Ian Holloway, yeah, he was my first Millwall manager, yeah. And I was, honestly, to me, that doesn't even feel like my lifetime, that I was on the bench in the Championship for Millwall the year that we were relegated. That doesn't like resonate with me because I hadn't made my pro debut. I always think about my pro debut being the start of my career. Mm. So those memories are well and truly in a different place for me. I've got no recollection of that season, what happened, where I was. Nothing. Weird, huh?
Nothing at all.
Nothing. I've got, it does, even you reminded me of that now. That's why I didn't say it. I've got no, for me, my career started when I played for Millwall in the thing. I remember a lot of the non-league stuff because of Danny and Nicky and what they've gone on to achieve, which has been unbelievable. But since that first period at Millwall, yeah. Weird, huh?
That is weird.
I've no, like, I couldn't tell you who I was on the bench against. I couldn't tell you anything about that season. Nothing. Apart from the fact that we were relegated. Because he'd got the sack and then Neil had come straight in at the end of the season. And I was ousted back out of the team because Neil said that I wasn't ready, which was completely right. I've got no recollection of that. Like, it was like a fight. Yeah, it was like a, it'd have been like a 6 month period. Yeah. I've got no, like, I've got no memories of that at all.
You know what? That ties into your social presence as well. Don't know whether you have realised this, but I think your first ever Instagram post, or at least the one that exists as your first post on Instagram,
is
when you made your debut for Millwall. Yeah. Like, you were like, right, I'm a professional footballer. Yeah. Now I'm on social media.
I think a lot of the stuff on there previous to that was not fit for a professional footballer's Instagram.
Good.
So I thought, let's have that as the start. And maybe subconsciously, yeah, maybe that's why that's the start that moves me on.
And the final question, which you are a listener to the podcast.
Absolutely.
So you will know the question
coming,
that is coming. Richard Lee, take it away.
Tom, a massive thank you for a fantastic podcast to this point and being very hospitable, I believe, in regards to Mr. Beadle. I know he can be a bit of a nuisance, but it is that time of the show. The most important question in the show, Tom King, what has goalkeeping given you?
Goalkeeping has given me an ability to be very resilient in everything that I've done in my career, off the pitch and on the pitch. To have 50,000 people at White Hart Lane taunting me for a bad mistake that I had against Hongmin Son in an FA Cup game, to kind of come off the pitch then and realise that if I want to perform and be the highest level, that this is going to happen, mistakes are going to happen, and past them doing that, nothing else bad happens, and you just draw a line under it and then you go again. And I've kind of taken that feeling with me wherever I've gone in my career, that no matter how bad it gets on the pitch, you come away, you step away, you go and have your life off the pitch, and you try and just move on. You just take the next step forward and you move on. And goalkeeping has given me that sense of resilience and that sense of, listen, you're going to make mistakes regardless of whether it's on the pitch or off the pitch, but it's always, your next action is always important, which is always what they say in goalkeeping. Your next action is what's important. You've chucked one in, you've missed the cross, you've had a bad kick, they've scored. But what is your next action tell us about you? And I've always tried to keep that with me, that no matter what I get wrong off the pitch, no matter what I've done wrong off the pitch, or whatever mistakes I've made, what does my next action tell people about me?
Tom King, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Fagel, come here! That swan's coming, Thomas.
Kill it.
Yes!